I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 197 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. And before we start, a big thank you to our Patreon supporters, without whom we would not be able to produce this podcast. If you like what you hear and you think you might want to help it grow, you can go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box. You can just click on the link there and that'll take you to the Ministry of Arts Patreon page. And you can support the podcast for as little as £3 a month, which is pretty much a cup of coffee, right? But if you don't fancy doing so, that's absolutely fine. This content is free for everyone. Kersler Arts Freedom Exhibition is still on at the Royal Festival Hall, and it's curated by none other than Ai Weiwei. It's a properly powerful exhibition, and I very much recommend it. Well, today's treat we've got in store for you is Annie Nicholson, aka Fandango Kid. She's a designer, installation artist, storyteller. She wears many a cap. And in and around the time we recorded this podcast, Annie was about to take her Fandango skip over to Manhattan, just in front of the site of the Twin Towers. The reasons for which you'll find out in this episode. But as the name may give away, it was an artwork created in a skip in collaboration with the Mighty Skip Gallery. And it was in conjunction with the Lost Project, which you'll also hear more about in this episode. But before I take you to meet Annie, I just mentioned the Skip Gallery. I absolutely love the Skip Gallery and everything it bloody stands for. It's run by Catherine Borowski and Lee Baker, both of whom have guested on this podcast. Catherine talking about the Skip Gallery was episode 104, and Lee talking about graphic rewilding, which was episode 123, and they are partners in both. And before I introduce you to Annie, I think it's only right that I mention we do speak about the loss of very close family members and the grief thereafter. So with that in mind, please come and join me over Zoom as I spoke to Annie Nichols, aka the Fandango Kid.
Hard, isn't it? It's hard to get, like, everyone's just so busy at the moment, but yeah, all good.
And are you busy at the moment?
Yeah, I am actually. Yeah, we're taking this last installation to New York, so it's just really just trying to plan that, and it's really tiring actually, but Yeah, it's really like, oh my God, I'm definitely don't have like a producer's mind at all.
Yeah.
Really tedious, so really hard. So yeah, it's really like every
Yeah,
day.
you look at things and you go, oh, that'd be all right. I'll just bring that into me practice. But
I
yeah,
know.
that's why there's a job title, right?
I feel like I haven't actually made anything for a really long time. I've got this, sorry, I've got an open studio happening. I'm not just like, here's
Yeah, just
a
showing off.
Yeah. I've just had to hang this up for tomorrow. But yeah. So just, I don't know, I'm just feeling like, yeah, quite tired by it, but hopefully it'll go all right.
Where is your studio? It's in Peckham, isn't it?
It's in Peckham, yeah.
Whereabouts is that? Well, I know where Peckham is, but I mean, whereabouts in Peckham?
It's in the Bussey Building actually, so it's just yeah, just opposite the station.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's good. Yeah, I just moved, so I've always lived north and then I moved south like
Boom.
2 years ago. Yeah, it's been quite a shift. So
And how was it? How was the move?
hard, really weird and hard, and I didn't really like want to move actually, but I just, yeah, needed to, I don't know, just wanted to get rid of my place at the time. So yeah, it's good now, but it's taken quite a long time, you
Good,
know.
good.
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in Romford in Essex.
Okay.
Or Essex, East London, you know.
Mm.
Is it Fandango Kid or the Fandango Kid?
Oh, either's okay.
Okay. Are you known as Annie or just Fandango Kid? Not.
No, please call me Annie.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, but some people do call me Fandango actually, but call me, yeah, whatever you want. Call me
Well,
whatever you want.
let's start by the name. Where does Fandango Kid come from?
Just it comes from because when I was graduating, I really wanted to, I've always really wanted to make work about like the human condition, people's secrets, you know, all these things. And I thought I'd like to have a bit of distance between my real name and that, just because I like, yeah, like making work about kind of intimacy and sort of telling stories and stuff. And I thought it might be good to have a bit of distance from that. And then I just was having a chat with my dad one day when he was alive, and we were watching, or he was watching, there's like a Western film called The Durango Kid, and my mum used to call me Fandango. And just, I think, you know, like real moment of like, would you just like shut up because I'm watching this, kind of just put
Yeah.
the two together, and it actually stuck. So yeah, it was kind of, it was just really by chance actually, but it did,
Good
yeah,
name.
it did just stick. But I kind of, now I'm like, oh God, I'm nearly 14, it feels a bit weird. I feel like maybe I should kind of just move on from it, but it's really hard to like get a new identity, so I don't know.
But the
Yeah.
Fandango Kid, the name, really sits well with your type of work, doesn't it?
Do you think?
Yeah, very much so.
I'm not quite, I quite like to sort of move forward, sort of bit more seriousness. So I don't know. Like yeah, it's really hard to make that change at a certain point, you know?
Yeah, but it's a persona, isn't it? As
Yeah.
well as a name. So
Yeah.
I don't know whether you feel the difference when you're talking as Fernando Kid or as Annie Nicholson.
It's really important. I think it's really important, you know. I think it, yeah, and I think it's good to have that kind of alter ego as well, and let go and all of that. No, it's interesting. I think it's also kind of, I don't know, I think at the time when I first started, so it took me a really long time to make work, and to make work publicly anyway, because my I was so as I graduated, like about a year later, as I was just sort of getting on my feet, my mum and my sister were killed in an accident, and I just,
Oh, well, sorry.
yeah, and I just, and I, and I just couldn't, like, I just couldn't make work for such a long time, and like publicly, and it took me like years and years and years. And then when I finally did, I was making like a lot of work about this terrible kind of grief. And it actually took, so they had died, and my sister's partner as well, and then my dad also died within that 5 year gap. And as he died, that's when I started to, so I'd lost, you know, almost all of my family. And as he died, I then started to make work kind of publicly and sort of tell some of these stories and leave sort of, yeah, I guess odes to them and on this sort of big pain and loss, and having that alter ego or that name was, well, for one, I was putting up like paste-ups on the streets. So I didn't really want to put my actual name. And then two, that was the sort of first thing, and it was felt quite urgent, and I really wanted to sort of tell these stories of like grief and sort of, and then yeah, and then I guess yeah, the content was really painful. So yeah, so it's been a good little bridge between myself and that kind of pain.
And especially where it stems from your mother and father as well during conversation,
yeah.
And
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Beautiful. It's beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I do have several questions, Annie, that I ask each guest.
Yeah.
The first being, how would you explain what you do to someone that doesn't know your work?
Well, it's a bit difficult because it's quite like multidisciplinary, I guess. There's lots of different, a lot of it is like narrative driven, so a lot of text, a lot of storytelling, but in different kind of formats and platforms. So I guess, yeah, telling stories about why we're here or why I think we might be here, the human condition, and lots of like, yeah, investigations into why we behave, how we do, and, you know, just thoughts really. No, nothing prescriptive, but storytelling, I guess.
Colour and pattern seem to be the most visual element of your work.
Yeah, I think
it's very happy work, if you don't mind me saying.
Well, yeah, I think the contrast is, you know, the color and the pattern is yeah, you know, really kind of vibrant, and I sort of grew up with like, yeah, quite like kind of dark dressing family and parents and stuff, but and quite eccentric, you know, particularly my dad. But the content is quite a clash, you know, the content's quite heavy often, yeah. Although it's changed a lot over the last couple of years as I've kind of moved through a lot of grief. But so it's changing loads at the moment, which is actually really nice, not making any work about grief anymore.
If you don't mind me just asking, what, your work is very colourful, full of pattern, and as I just mentioned, it has got a happy vibe. How did that marry, if you're all right talking about this, I don't want to intrude, it's only because it came up in conversation, how did that work with grief?
I think at first when it was, I mean, and it's still, you know, a lot of the work still is very public, like public art, public sort of commissions and that kind of thing. So I think... and I do get asked to do a lot of stuff around grief and loss still, and I think it's quite surprising because what might draw you in kind of colour and pattern wise and might sort of attract you to something, when you kind of get there, you know, that there are all of these other layers around, you know, and invitations to have a dialogue about something, yeah, that is probably a bit unexpected at first and maybe a bit more complex than you might have imagined when you just see something really bright from a distance. So I think I kind of quite enjoy that surprise, but at the same time, I don't, you know, would never force someone to be taken off guard. So you can still access it in many different ways. You can just enjoy, yeah, the visual sort of element of it, or you can choose to engage with it on a deeper level. So yeah, I hope that there's lots of different kind of ways to access, yeah, the work.
But it's a great thing is to be able to twist someone's emotion, isn't it? Or their expectation, rather, twist their expectation, because they see something that is very quite colourful and happy and go towards it, then find out what the narrative is. And then they sort of jump on board, don't they, you know? And everyone's got that, well, most people have got that experience themselves, so they can relate to it, can't they, you know?
Yeah, and it's been really interesting, like, making these, making sort of public work and working with charities and, you know, programmers to kind of think about how we might, like, engage people and you know, make them feel comfortable and safe to talk about these kinds of things. And I guess, like, I probably will always be interested in that, creating these sorts of spaces for people, because when I had all of these losses, there really wasn't anything like that available, and there was such a like long, lonely, hard period, and just, you know, really frightening, I think, and I think I just sort of thought, you know, oh, it could be really amazing to sort of, you know, to try and contribute to changing this conversation a bit, because actually, yeah, it is something that is going to come to everybody, maybe not in quite as a sort of traumatic, hopefully traumatic way that it sort of happened to me, but who knows, you know, I never thought that would ever happen.
And of course.
So I think, I hope that it contributes to sort of changing something for people. You know, we speak so much more now, so much more openly about mental health, about all these taboo things that we never used to speak about. And we just, you know, traditionally kind of just locked.
Yeah, well, that's why it's so many of us, exactly. That's why so many of us carry around all that bloody baggage, is because the generation before have taught us not to bloody talk about it.
And,
put it all away, and in the end, you just end up fucking imploding, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're right. I was just talking about this with a friend the other day, like this sort of generational, I mean, it doesn't have to be trauma, but generational baggage stuff, whatever you want to call it, that you carry all the way through, and at what point you break it, because actually breaking it is like loads of work. It's really tiring. It's probably quite expensive because it's a lot of therapy. Like, it's, you know, but it's so great if you can.
Yeah. Well, it's taken us a lifetime to get where we are carrying that baggage. You can't just sort of offload it in one go, can you?
No.
It's going to take a long time to get rid of it. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we hold it because, like, you know, there are reasons for it. Like, you know, we just, you know, depending on what time you grew up in, we're sort of thinking, I was talking about this and, yeah, like how nothing was ever, you know, nothing was really talked about on an emotional level, my parents or my grandparents, or, you know, it came out in so many other ways that, yeah, it's really, really good to do the work of breaking it, but it's no small feat. It's like, no. You know.
Well, we decided, I've got children that are 15 and 18, a girl and a boy, the boy being 18. And I decided very consciously to try my best to be open and different to what my parents, or I grew up with a single parent, tried to make that change, you know, be positive, be open. And it does show with how my children have grown up compared to me at that age. You know, they're a lot more open, a lot more bloody happy, you know, and yeah, it does make a difference, you know?
Yeah. That's fantastic. I think it's really, you know, I guess it's a brave, you've got to be quite comfortable and have, understood a lot about yourself to be open, I guess, with your kids, right? Because you've got to be vulnerable.
Definitely. Did you have creativity in home growing up?
Yeah, we did. We did, but I think, so my dad was born in 1940 in Blackpool, left school at 15, went into the Navy, didn't really, I think there were a few stories he wanted to do something creative. Like, he was really good at drawing and technical drawing, and he was just kind of told that that would never kind of work out for him. And I think that some of that got passed through. Like, they were really, my parents were really fearful about, like, both of them, like, you know, okay, great, like, but how are you going to make any money? It was always like, how are you going to make
money? Of course. Yeah, I think probably 95% of the artists I speak to on here was told that by their parents.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Definitely. Oh, that's interesting. That makes me feel a bit more comforted.
Yeah, get something to fall back on.
Yeah. It's always that, isn't it? But I guess that's probably, you know, I mean, God, it is.
It's not wrong what they're saying.
No.
You know, they're speaking from the mind, we're speaking from the heart. You know, there's a difference in between.
But probably also, you know, like, well, if it all goes on, we're not going to pay for it. So,
well, yeah. I discovered art well late in life, you know.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't discover it until I was 28 or 27 or something like that.
That's still quite young, though.
But even then, when I wanted to start a degree, like, you know, I fell in love with art and wanted to sort of, go forward and be an artist. All of my mates were going, well, you could be a tattooist or a sign writer, because that's as far as the working class creative went, you know. They didn't think of an artist. That was for the middle classes, you know, as far as we was concerned.
Yeah, it's. I think it's. I guess that's like wanting to assign like a, yeah, a kind of skill rather than a yeah. practice. And I remember hearing that kind of thing a lot as well. You know, like. Well, I think my auntie said to me, "Oh, you," because at the time, like, I really was always drawing, like doing all these dress ups and drawing clothes and stuff. And she's like, "Well, you'll never be a fashion designer because you're no good at maths." You know, this kind of like weird thinking, and it stays with you. You know, yeah. and you just sort of think a lot of this stuff is set out of fear, or yeah. ignorance, or whatever.
Yeah, they're only trying to protect you, but at the same time, throwing them little nuggets of negativity at you. Some of them can.
Some land, grow, definitely. Yeah, yeah. It's weird, isn't it? It's, yeah. But I guess I do think if you kind of want something enough, you get there in the end anyway.
So where was it you grew up? In what area?
Oh, in a tiny little village. It was close to Oxford, but like really tiny. My mum and dad, yeah, they, I don't know how they like, found that or whatever, but they met in my granddad's butcher's shop. yeah, after
romance, cross the pork chops when their eyes met.
literally, my mum was making sausages. Just brilliant. Got divorced, and she was supposed to pay my dad a check. So my dad used to work with my granddad, and yeah, and then it was literally like on the day that he asked her out, I think. So, and then they ended up finding a place, I don't know, like, yeah, this little tiny village that, to be honest with you, I couldn't wait to leave. I really didn't. Found it really narrow and quite weird out there. But, yeah, Oxford's really, like, really, really beautiful. But this was not. This was, like, I'm just telling you, I'm just sort of explaining for, like, geography, you know, for geographical reasons. Yeah. It was so, yeah. I mean, you know, look, the worst places to grow up for sure, but it was just really narrow-minded, like really like...
Well, no one's got the experience. The community hasn't got the experiences of a city, have they, you know?
No. And I just couldn't wait to leave. I was always like obsessed by like, I just wanted to have adventures, you know, that's all right.
And where did you move to for your adventure?
So I left at like... 18. My sister, who passed away, was living in Sydney, so I went to live with her for a bit.
Nice.
And then I went to uni in Brighton, and I did a year in Paris as part of my degree, came back, moved to London, and I've pretty much been there ever since, like except for like some long periods back and forth to New York. Yeah, but
so you've definitely found your excitement.
Yeah. It's been really, you know, I would never, ever live in a village. Ever, never.
It sounds like it's proper scarred you, Annie.
No thanks.
Not even back to retire in your no old
way.
Age.
No way. I mean, not in this country. I think there's like, I don't mind like, you know, sort of rural thing in another country, because there's a bit of a tuning out, you know, you don't, if you not understanding every single nuance, but here, no fucking way.
When did you realize you wanted to be an artist?
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think it's weird because there's like studying and then there's like really like being, you know, living that and having that as your practice. And it's a weird thing because I think you have to like kind of affirm it every day, really. Like, I think it's, there's some days when I find it like, oh God, it's not moving fast enough. And I find it really, like, there's some days when I really don't know if I can carry on doing it, or it feels like really, but I think probably after my dad died, and I felt like I'd lost so much in my life that it was like, okay, all your fears now, like, there's basically nothing else to lose, because you kind of lost like all your worst fears have kind of realized. So if you do this and you lose this, then who actually cares? Because, you know, it's all, yeah, there's been so much that you've already, like, you're still alive, amazing, you know, like, yeah. Well, just go for it then, kind of thing. Brilliant. So there was a fearlessness that I never had before, because I've always been quite like cautious and a bit of a like little nerd, really. But then this happened and something just started to run through me that was quite fearless.
Yeah, nice. It's as if it's a message from beyond, isn't it, telling you to get your ass in gear and crack on. Yeah, brilliant.
It's weird, because I still hear them, you know, very much so, you know, with, if I'm worried, because I do like worry about, yeah, money, about, you know, we all do, but like balancing things. And I hear
grown up stuff.
Yeah, I hear them a lot with, you know, there's a lot of them, you know, running good through. But yeah.
Good. Yeah, they're still with you on the journey. That's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes a little too much. So,
leave me alone. Give me a bit of peace, will you?
Yeah.
Annie, which piece that you've created do you think has got the strongest emotional connection?
Oh God, I think this show that we're taking to New York is really meaningful to me, because that is where I lost a lot of my family. So it marks the 10-year anniversary of that loss, and it's sort of happening in an area where, close to where they died, and I've been working towards it for such a long time. The idea is, you know, to it's an installation that encourages conversations around grief and loss. It's, you know, really site specific, and it's really meaningful to me that, well, one, that I'm still, that I've survived this, and two, that I could maybe do something that might be useful for other people. And I hope it is. I'm not assuming that it is, but I've heard that it's been useful. So,
and where and when is that?
So it's happening. It's in Battery Park, just in front of World Trade Center, and it's happening from the 6th to the 10th of October. And it's called Fandango Skip. It's working with Skip Gallery, who you may or may not know.
I've worked with them myself. I was lucky enough to have my own skip this time last year.
Did you? Amazing.
I absolutely love, from the moment I saw them. Sorry to stop you in your tracks there, but
no, they're amazing. I've
said this to Catherine and Lee.
Yeah.
The moment I saw the Skip Gallery, when I first saw the Skip Gallery in Hoxton Square, I fell in love with the whole concept like that. It was
really amazing. Really love them a lot. And I totally can understand why that would, you know, you guys would get along. So, yes, it's called the Fandango Skip. And this one's called the Fandango Skip On Tour. And it's going to New York, and we just changed it up a little bit. But it's like, we don't want to call it the Fandango Dumpster either, because it's like, well,
yeah,
it's
I'm
working with them, and working with some architects called Corkin, who I have worked with a bit this year, who are really amazing. They do a lot of sustainable architecture, and they're just really lovely people as well. So it's been a really nice collaboration. We did it in London, and then we're taking it to New York.
I mean, yeah. I do know the skip in question, but to visualise it for the listener, what would they be likely to see?
It's serving ice cream as a way to kind of have conversations around grief and mental health. And it's, I guess the palette is very kind of 80s Miami ice cream, if that means anything. So like lots of pastels, lots of checkerboard, like quite sort of 80s tones, like minty, you know, kind of, yeah, pinks, lilacs, sort of peach, but with some good checkerboard. Yeah.
And it is built upon a skip with a mirror image skip as a roof.
Yeah, so this one is going to be like a kind of it's kind of like rectangular, and you can sit inside it, and it has a little roof on the top, where you can do like talks and workshops and participate in the program, which is led by this charity called the Lost Project, who are also amazing. And we're working with like lots of local New Yorkers to encourage these conversations around grief and mental health and talks. And yeah, it's a really interesting program, and we're hoping that it will really help people.
So the American equivalent to a skip, is it like what we see on the films? Is it one of those like them Euro bins, like the big square thing on wheels?
Pretty much,
with the lids, not like ours, which are, I don't even, what's the shape called of ours?
It's like a trapezium.
Is that what it is? Yeah, it's a skip shape.
Trapezium or a parallelogram. Anyway, it's...
both worked with skips. We really should know.
Yeah, we should know this. But
I'll edit it to make us sound really intelligent.
I think it's a trapezium, this is big kind of rectangle container. I think there's it's a much bigger space than which is good because we can hold more people for talks and things. But
and it's going to the site.
So it's going to be built and painted there. So it's going to be built in like Queens somewhere.
Nice.
And then it's going to go to World Trade Center and be there for a week
And are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm going to go for a few days. Yeah. Hopefully not be too involved in that much stuff, but just like be there, which would be nice. I'm really proud of it. And I'm proud of this beautiful collaboration because it's been so great it's been so nice when you work with people where it really works,
I saw your skip being made when Catherine first posted the I think it was like a sketch of it, wasn't it, she put up first of all.
Amazing. I'm like, oh yeah, it was quite a big job actually. We really kind of were overwhelmed by that,
I followed it being built. You put images up as well, didn't you, of it?
Being built
and coming together. Superb. But I didn't know that was the narrative behind it, to be honest.
Thank you.
Quite a thing to go on to. And talking about grief, you couldn't get a better place to put it in front of what was there, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really it's really interesting because we've been sort of signing this off, we've had loads of conversations with the people commissioning it about just how we talk about grief, how we talk about this collectively, how deeply sensitive it is, being in this particular site for New Yorkers and how we do this and how we sort of navigate this. And we're working with people with a real, with New Yorkers who have a real sensitivity to this experience. But I think, we don't want to do anything that's like forceful or prescriptive. We just want to contribute,
Just let them take the lead of their own conversation if they choose to.
Exactly.
Yeah, brilliant. Exactly. Brilliant. And that is when, from the 6th to 10th, it's very soon, isn't it?
Very soon.
From 6th to 10th. Wow.
Yeah, I know. I've got like lists just backed up here of like really dull lists, but like, yeah.
And is it going on a tour after there?
I would love it to. I don't know if it will or not. We haven't got anything in place at the moment. I'd love it to kind of go through the US, but this has been so tiring to kind of get it to New York that I haven't made any plans for its afterlife yet.
And you mentioned the Lost Project. Are you doing it in association with the Lost Project?
Yeah. So I met Carly, who runs the Lost Project, maybe a year ago.
And sorry, could you just tell us what the Lost Project is, what they're about?
Yeah, so they are a charity that kind of does a lot of work around grief, like individual and collective grief and mental health associated with like with loss and trauma. And they're just amazing, doing amazing work in London and beyond. And they have programmed the London Skip in Greenwich and Canary Wharf, and they kind of continue to program a wider
Brilliant.
New York show. So yeah, that just it's been a real like joy meeting them, meeting Carly particularly, just really sensitive and incredible. Yeah.
And if you're going to talk about grief, you know, looking at something that colourful and bright, you're starting on an upward step.
Yeah, I think so. And I think again, you know, people probably will be drawn to it and not quite know, and then, you know, maybe stay, or maybe, you know, the other thing is that it serves ice cream. So, you know, with a view to kind of opening up conversations in a more like,
Yeah.
calm and joyful or calm kind of way. So that it's not
Brilliant.
forceful. Yeah.
Has Fandango Kid got her own flavour?
I think it's I think we've chosen a few actually. There's some good, there's some really good flavors actually. Yeah, we're gonna change them every day, so you know we've got
Question that I do have here, Annie. If there was you and five other artists, past and present, what would your ideal group show be?
Oh my God, I mean the dream. Do you mean like the dream group show? Yeah, I'd like Sophie Kell for sure,
Nice.
Keith Haring, Jenny Holzer probably, and I have to have a think about the others, but you know, yeah, there's yeah, I love they're my kind of fave.
Good. That's a good bunch to be around. Oh yeah, all sitting there, ordering ice cream.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
What do you reckon you'd like to do if you wasn't an artist, Annie?
Oh my God. I think I'd like to be a therapist, but I probably would be like probably wouldn't be the best therapist for really. I really like to
And where what do you think would get in your way of not being the best?
probably to really try and dig in a bit to come, you know, a bit too soon. Probably try and dig in
Tell
myself.
me more. Tell
Yeah,
me more.
like really forceful probably, and that might not go down well. Yeah.
Yeah, while they're sitting in the chair and you're laying on
Yeah.
the
Exactly. Yeah.
bench. Superb. I mean, other than the Fandango skip, do you have anything else coming up?
There's another project that I'm like trying to work on for 2023, which is a little dance, like mini disco, like a traveling like kind of mini club that I'm working on at the moment, with the idea that again, like dance kind of therapy, so kind of movement as a way of like just having a dance floor where you can bring anything to it and shake it out. So that's my next project.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And are you a dancer yourself?
I love dancing, but that's about all I can say. Yeah, really
Yeah. Whether
love.
you're any good at it or not is a
Yeah,
different kettle
but
of fish.
I wouldn't. Yeah, no, I do love dancing. Yeah,
Brilliant.
yeah.
I mean that should be clipping on the end of or approaching the end of this podcast, but could I ask you just before, which is something I forgot earlier on, I might even snip it in and make it sound like I'm a good interviewer. Could you tell us about the Staircase of Dreams?
Oh yeah. Okay. So that was 2020 London Design Festival. It was a part of, I don't know, there's like a sort of a trail in like East London trail or
Yeah.
something. But the focus was we did all of the kind of work, like the preparation work on Zoom because we were in a lockdown. So the focus was kind of daily activism, young people, and speaking to them about like ways of coping with isolation and potential kind of loss in this time. And so we had all of these Zooms for like a couple of months, where we'd speak to different groups of young people who went to the college because it was at Waltham Forest College. And we just, yeah, we wanted to, at the time, they needed to make like a kind of socially distant COVID safe staircase. Yeah. Like quite complicated, and and all of the narrative really came from speaking to the young people about modes of coping and being resilient and being kind of politically active and just engaged, and it was a really interesting time and quite impressive, like for everybody that it managed to kind of be pulled off under the circumstances. And even the launch of it was, we had like a bunch of new restrictions, so we had to like stand in groups of six. Like everything was like really weird and impressive that we that
like dystopian environment.
Yeah, but we still did it, and you know, like every part of that project, even the install, like people were like isolated. You know, it was like, but we still did it, and I was really impressed by people's kind of commitment. You know, to
brilliant.
Yeah, it's really amazing, really great. Loved that project and people, everyone involved.
And where was it placed? It was on the stairs to, was it the town hall or was that the college?
It's the college next to the town hall, Walthamstow. Yeah.
It was a wide, how wide are those stairs? 30 feet wide?
Yeah, about that. Probably should know. It's probably like implanted in my brain.
And it's a big, it's probably a 1950s building, but it's got the columns and a massive wide entrance, hasn't it?
Yeah, so it was quite a thing to paint them, and it took a long time to kind of sign off, and it was a lot back and forth, but it was, I'm really glad we did, and it brought a lot of kind of joy, I think, to the area.
And I would think it brought a lot of joy to the individuals as well, doing it at that time when, you know, when there's all those restrictions in order.
Yeah, the stuff that we did kind of do in lockdown was there was a real thrill to it, because you just you had to really, really want to do something.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's really, you know, we painted a school when no one was there, or like, you know, it was really like, crazy to think back on. Yeah.
Well, where can anyone see the Fandango Kid, be it social media or website?
So you can just find me on at fandangokid.com, and you can also see me in person on Thursday and Friday, but that might be irrelevant depending on when this comes out.
So this ain't going to be out for quite a little while, actually.
but
how did your open studios go a couple of days after we spoke?
Oh, great. Yeah, we sold loads of work.
And is that what you're doing? You're selling there as well?
Yeah, I want to get rid of loads of stuff so that I can start making some new stuff.
It's good to have a little clear out, isn't it?
Yeah, a real clear out. Yeah.
Brilliant. Good. Well, Annie, thank you for your time. I really do appreciate you. And I wish you all the very best for the 6th to the 10th over there.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I hope it's not too much of a rocky journey going back over there again for you.
Yeah, thanks.
I wish
so
you all
much.
The best of luck.
All right.
See you later, Annie. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.